the narrative of fatherhood became so great for me that that work became lesser than for me. I'm like, I just want to be a dad. I want to be a great dad. I want to raise these kids. I want these kids to work with me in the future. And so the work that I was doing, I had zero motivation for that. I continued to get fired by my clients because they were like, hey, it seems like you don't really care about this and you really care about your family. I had to keep saying, you're right.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. Hey, all you Abrahamic fathers, I hope your year's off to a bang-up start. And I wanted to give you a little bit of inspiration this week by interviewing a local friend of mine here in Cincinnati. It's a guy named Eric Stanio. He's an interesting character. As you're going to hear, he started out with a Young Life background. He and his wife were these, you know, kind of live on nothing volunteers who were just spending time with high schoolers. And he went through the process that I see a lot of young dads going through, where you're in a job that either you see isn't sustainable, I'm not going to be able to build a family life around this, or it's something you just don't enjoy. There's no passion and you think, I'm not going to keep doing this or I'm going to go crazy. And so you start through the uncomfortable process of going, God, what am I made to do? What can I do out there? So we're going to hear from Eric on his story. And for those who know the Cincinnati scene, Eric is part of our local community here. I see Eric in a couple of places, one of which is the YAM, Young Adult Midrash. I think I've described that before. I have a couple of kids in that. Eric has one, and he's part of the Jeremy Pryor ecosphere, if you know that name. And so anyways, we're gonna hear some of Eric's story. I think you'll be encouraged that, you know, as long as you're willing to try, as long as you're willing to walk in Abraham's steps and go, I'm going to take responsibility for what you've given me, God, would you help lay out a path for me? I'm going to walk by faith. I'm going to believe that you're going to take care of me and my family. I feel like I'm a jangling mess, but I'm giving you my life, Lord. And he has a way of laying those things out. So I bless you and I bless the plans that God has for you and your family as you listen to this interview with my friend Eric Stanio. Eric, thank you for coming to us from the studio space that you've got going on. This is the most put together scene that we've ever had a guest have. Tell me quickly, why do you look like you're so on top of it? You're just a little studio thing.
Wow, what a compliment. The answer is because I have an assistant with a designer eye that I don't have. But I'm a real estate agent and I use YouTube videos. And so I record a lot of videos here in my office to help give the people the content that they so desperately crave about Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky.
Have you ever considered putting up like posters of successful football players on your wall?
You know, Joe Burrow has made a lot of people money over his college and professional career. And I am not ashamed to say that I am one of them. and I would, I wish this year was a little bit, you know, I wish it was a little bit better. We were heading to the playoffs so that more people would want to move here and watch him play.
Oh, I see. I see over your head, about an inch over your head is a blurry word, Cincinnati. So kind of your brand, which we'll talk about in a while.
Yeah.
Has to do with Cincinnati. So Joe Burrow's part of that for the time being.
He is. Yeah. A friend of mine, you probably know him, a mutual artist friend, Daniel Armstrong, drafted our logo, which pop it up here. Bam, bam. Bam.
Uh-huh.
Which is the beautiful Roebling Bridge in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And we modified it slightly.
You falsified the image of the Roebling Bridge?
A little bit. Well, no, we modified it slightly. If you look at our logo versus the bridge, we wanted to focus on the table.
Yes.
So our tagline is find your home, strengthen your family. And the idea of the bridge is, hey, we're real estate. We're going to do the real estate thing. We'll help you find your home. But the table is obviously the centerpiece symbol of the home and the place where your family should grow strong together.
Pretty good. It's a pretty good logo.
Thanks.
Okay. Here's the thing. What I know of you is that you, like many of the Abe's Wallet listeners, you were about elbow deep into ministry world and made peanuts doing that, which is how that typically works. And at some point, you were a frustrated man trying to find a niche with regards to a career. And you ducked and dived your way into something that seems to be working. So when that happens, you and I just had a chat in passing about how's your career going? And your answer was kind of spankling. It's kind of going spanking good. And yeah. So I thought, well, that could be value to our people. So all I want you to do is tell us your story. So I want you to tell us where you started at Frustrated Idealist, and then how you got to what you're doing right now and what you're doing. That's it.
Okay.
Go.
Great. Thank you. Love to. Yeah, it was very frustrating for a long time, but good. I grew up here in Northern Kentucky with met my wife through the ministry of Young Life. I was her camp leader. So always a great way to meet your future spouse.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yep. We followed all the rules mostly, but we got married. We've been married 19 years. We have 5 kids. We live in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. Our neighbor is a mutual friend of the show, Jeremy Pryor. We live next door to the Pryors.
Heard of it.
Yep. So we were Young Life leaders. Yeah, we weren't working for peanuts. We were working for nothing as volunteer Young Life leaders post-college. That was, as you said, our whole world at the time was trying
to... Like, you didn't have supporters or anything? There was just $0 attached to it.
We helped raise money to start an area in Southeast Cincinnati, in the Anderson Township area. And we raised money to hire a staff person, but we were always volunteer leaders.
But you didn't get any of it.
Correct. No.
Okay.
Yeah. We looked into that, but really by God's grace, I would say, we were looking at moving to go on staff in a different state. And I remember my mother-in-law saying, "You don't want to move away from us. I won't be my grandbabies." And we had no grandbabies at the time. And I thought that was a crazy statement to make. But then when the grandbabies started coming, I was so thankful that we stayed here because we had both sets of parents here locally. Such a blessing. So fast forward, I failed at selling health insurance. Then I went and delivered pizzas for 2 years for local pizzeria La Rosa's. Bought my wife's wedding ring with pizza delivery money while living in a house with 7 other guys that we dubbed the Ocho because the movie Dodgeball had come out. Then I failed at financial planning and selling whole life insurance and financial products to all of my families and friends. And when I ran out of them, I realized, oh, that's their business model, is recruit young college guys who don't know what they're doing to sell whole life insurance to their families and friends. And then after that, I got into internet marketing. That's around the time I met Jeremy Pryor, Stephen Morey. This was like 2006, so like 18 years ago-ish. My friend Ford Knowlton introduced us, and he said, "You got to meet this guy. He's talking about my grandfather and using words like multi-generational." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" So we met Jeremy, actually got hired by him early on. They had a business prior, one of their earlier businesses, I went to work for, as a link builder doing SEO research. And that started a period where I kind of, for about 10 years, worked in kind of the internet marketing space. During that time, my wife and I, greatly impacted by the story of Abraham and studying Genesis a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your listeners might approve of that name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone who's listening to this has kind of been like, yeah, that's when things changed, when you started thinking about multi-generations and assets, and what does that mean? So we launched a few piddling e-commerce stores during that time. But I would say the first business we launched, which was blanketmybaby.com, just a killer name. And yeah, we made about 8 cents per blanket sale.
Yeah.
But it got us off the schneid of the fear of starting a business, I would say. That was extremely valuable to get over that hump of like, what do you mean set up an LLC? And what do you, mm-hmm, like, what do you do? And how do I do accounting and all of that stuff? So we had a series of those, and we were getting into rental real estate a little bit, just trying to develop multiple streams of income. All of that was kind of working. We were having more and more kids. At one point, I went to actually work for a startup company here locally. And I worked for them for 2 years, mostly because I was lonely, like doing link building in my office alone, and kind of wanted to work for a team and also get a piece of a business that potentially had the ability to scale and pay out large. So it was kind of like a roll of the dice.
What is link building?
Oh, essentially telling Google, hey, my website is important because these websites are linking to my website, to try to improve your rankings on Google so that more people click on your website and pay revenue to your business.
Sounds fun.
It was not.
Okay.
And then you would like do it for a while, and then Google would twist their algorithm, and everything would blow up. I'm like, this is stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that kept happening over and over again. So I got to a point around 2015, 16. We had three kids and a fourth on the way. And I was really struggling with work. Because what had happened for me, and some of your listeners may resonate with this, was the narrative of fatherhood became so great for me that the narrative that work became lesser than for me. And so I just want to be a dad. I want to be a great dad. I want to raise these kids. I want these kids to work with me in the future. And that was all great. I think that was all good. However, with my past experience with the volunteer ministry work, I'd kind of separated work out to be like holy work and unholy work. And so the work that I was doing, link building and helping other companies rank online and doing their social media and blah, 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 I had zero motivation for that. And what happened was I continued to get fired by my clients because they were like, hey, it seems like you don't really care about this and you really care about your family. We're going to fire you. And I had to keep saying, you're right. Sorry about that. You probably should fire me. That got me to a place. A friend of mine introduced me to a book by Tim Keller called Every Good Endeavor. Fantastic read. The big aha for me out of that book was you're created in God's image. God is a worker. Therefore, any work that you do glorifies God. And it doesn't matter if it's preaching and or evangelizing or whatever, or some kind of ministry work, or building a chair, or collecting garbage, or selling real estate, whatever it is. And that was great for me because in my heart, I like worshiping God. And so the idea of doing that all work was worship was very encouraging and freeing for me. I needed that. And so at that point asked the question to God, what work did you make me to do? And that was a 2-year process for me. It was very frustrating of taking like StrengthsFinder's tests and personality tests and praying and but just really asking the Lord, I'm open. I want to work now. What should I do?
I'd like to just draw that out a little bit more, what you've just said. One is the, as you say, the narrative of fathering. I just think of it as when you put your hand to the plow of leading a family, and you start to see when your kids get over the age of 3, and you start to see there's a return on this, and it's actually building living human beings that have my name and are carrying, going to be carrying my destiny into the future, your heart migrates into, okay, this matters more than any earning, income earning I'll ever do. And if the income earning I do doesn't serve this family, it's a waste of time. It's an ego trip that doesn't last. I think that's important because I think that dynamic happens to a lot of people and then they feel really stuck. And for the ministry types, in the stratosphere of the Mount Rushmore books around here, one of those has to be Thou Shall Prosper by Daniel Lappin, the rabbi, the good rabbi, Daniel Lappin. And his first law is that to make money is in itself a noble and virtuous thing.
Right.
And much like you, coming from a very ministerial, spiritual background, that was a real mind shift for me to understand, oh, that fathering, to father successfully, means to make money successfully. And those things are not at odds. They're both virtuous. They serve one another. So I think there's a lot of people in that same spot of asking, how do I efficiently provide for my family in a way that doesn't damage my family while I do it? I've had two conversations this week with guys who are traveling so much for work that their marriages suffer and their children are partially estranged from them because of the travel for their work. And at some point you realize, well, the making of money, if it's to serve my family, how is it tearing my family down? So anyways, these are all common tensions to people. So the way that God led you to a solution is very important. I want you to take a step by step through the Lord. Okay, you're in these 2 years of going, here's my situation. How do I step my way out of this?
Yeah, I'll speak to that in a moment. Just to go back real quick to that fear of making money. The reason I got into Young Life leading after college, most Young Life leaders do that while they're in college. I was at Lipscomb University in Nashville, right down the street from your alma mater.
That's right.
Belmont University. And I was an accounting and management double major and a Bible minor because I just really liked the Bible classes. There was a career fair, and I remember a guy who came like 6'3", handsome, great suit, nice watch, and like kind of put his arm on one from one of the big accounting firms, and was like, "How would you like to make six figures and golf 3 times a week?" And I said, "That is exactly what I would like to do." Yes, sold. Count me in. But I walked away that night, and what actually happened in my heart was I got really scared by my reaction, which was like, "You just love money,
yep.
You greedy little guy, you." And that scared me, and I ran the other way, which was unpaid volunteer youth ministry.
Yep.
Which you know, like I said, to your point, that set that whole career and wealth building. But there was, you know, it was a lie, you know, or it was incorrect. And I'll still say to this day, I've shifted on this, but I'm trying to be as alert as I can to the trap of wealth while building as much wealth as possible.
Yes.
It's a very weird.
That's it.
It's a nice edge, right? And I just always want my heart to be tested. And I constantly feel like I'm asking the Lord, if this was all taken away, would I still love you? Would I still yep. trust you? While trying to build a huge thing. You know, for my kids and for the future. So yes. So how did I get into real estate, heading back into that after the 2 years, grace and the Lord dragging me into it, in a way that I was wasn't expecting, because I looked into some real estate investing a little bit. I was kind of interested in that, but the idea of being a real estate agent was not something I wanted to do, again, because I don't want to work nights and weekends and be away from my kids and be the person who's checked out on their cell phone all the time.
Yep.
So I actually, what was happening was, after the 2-year process, I was fed up and I'm like, Lord, what's going on here? Like, what are you going to do here? And eventually I was like, you know what? I'm sick of this. I'm just going to try, wholesaling real estate, which is like the we buy houses for cash kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do that online because I'm good at getting leads online and I don't have the money to buy these houses, but I can get the leads and sell them. And because I knew how to do that. And so I started getting these leads and then I started meeting these sellers of these homes. I got one under contract. I put it on this investor website called Bigger Pockets, which like all it is people buying and selling different real estate things. And another local wholesaler said, hey, you can't do that, because I'm like, what are you talking about? I can't do it. There's like thousands of properties on this website. He's like, no, you're not a licensed real estate agent. You can't say this property is for sale. You can say the contract is for sale, but you can't say the property is for sale. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I like breaking rules, but I also don't like getting in trouble. So
yes,
I was like, you know what? I should probably go get my real estate license. And so I opened up the book to chapter one, like these are the skill sets of what it means to be a real estate agent. And it matched like line for line all of my strengths finders for the last few years that I'd been looking at. Like, oh, I think this is actually a really good fit. So I kind of backed into it the way the Lord just kind of brought me to it.
Yeah.
Is my answer. I was not seeking it. And then over the past, I guess it's been 6, almost 7 years, it's been a venture of both doing the real estate agent side and the real estate investing side at the same time.
Talk to us from going from zero to whatever you're describing.
It should have been terrifying, but it wasn't. My wife, like I said, so at that time, like I said, my fourth was on the way. While she was giving birth to my one daughter, we have 4 boys and 1 daughter. I was going through real estate licensing modules in the hospital because
have a high tolerance for uncertainty, is what you're telling us.
Well, what happened was, because we had taken all of those risks with the little piddling e-commerce stores and or various other businesses, and every time we got pregnant, I either lost a job or my pay decreased. but the Lord was faithful in each one of those times, and there was provision every single time. And so when it came to like, hey, honey, I know our fourth kid is on the way, and my taxable income was like $27,000 or something last year. Like,
nice.
You know, why don't I try this new venture where 90% of people fail? She was like, yeah, go for it.
Wow. Bless her.
Bless her. But it was like, bless the Lord, because he had been so faithful providing in all those times. And we had seen that it had built up our faith enough to where we're like, even if this doesn't work, he's going to protect us.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, it was still scary and hard. And we were starting, like you said, we started from scratch with it, but we had the track record of his faithfulness.
Yep.
Which allowed us to make the leap. And then, you know, a lot of hard work and the Lord just blessing it over the last several years.
Okay. So I'm listening to you as a guy that's kind of interested in getting into real estate. And all I heard you say was, I got a license. There was a bunch of hard work. And now I'm into owning and investing in real estate. There's a lot in there. What'd you do?
Well, the wholesaling side is kind of scary and has a bad reputation of people robbing little old ladies for good reason, because you don't need a license and you don't need any money to get started. And so it doesn't draw like the greatest crowd of people. But on that side, what I found really helpful was like, oh, if you do have character, which I think I have some of that, like you can really set yourself apart by treating people with dignity and honesty. because what you run into on that side is people who are in really hard positions. You know, their house is either a wreck, they're going through foreclosure, maybe divorce, maybe someone died. So anyway, you can get started on that side without money and without a license pretty quickly. That's one.
And are you calling that your real estate investing? Is that what you're calling?
Yeah. So what happened with that? Like early on, because I was able to generate the leads, I'd get the contract. I would sell it to other investors who would either flip the property or rent it out. And I would get a fee as the middleman, as someone who brought them the lead. So it's a way to get kind of fees in the middle quickly, without having to build up a whole, you know, different database on the other side. Okay. And then over time, as I was able to save more money, it's like, oh, I can buy this property now. I don't have to sell it. And we just kept doing that. There was a house in Cincinnati here that I bought for like $30,000. And I took my 8-year-old son with me. We went and vacuumed it and like scrubbed the baseboards and then sold it for $60,000. Like a week later, I'm like, that works. Like that, we can do a few more of that. And then we took that 30K that we made and like, let's save that up to buy the next one. And so that has been snowballing. And, you know, now we're, instead of flipping all of them just for the cash, we're holding onto some of those for as rentals. On the real estate agent side, my number one recommendation would be to, and I'm sure you could get this for free, but go to your nearest Keller Williams office and say, I would like the red book, please. And they would be more than happy to give you that book for free. It was a book written by Gary Keller called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And it's literally just gives you the path of what to do step by step.
Wow.
The biggest reason why real estate agents fail, he's kind of got this pyramid, whatever. I don't need to get into all the charts, but you have to be able to generate leads. Okay. Fortunately for me, in the 10 years of failure and making zero money before real estate, I did learn how to generate leads. I knew how to do some internet marketing and some different things, some video. And so that was extremely beneficial for me coming over into real estate, where I can continue to do lead generation via social media or YouTube or different things. But you don't have to know how to do that. One thing that's great about real estate is you can generate leads in about 50 different ways. And so most people, when they think of real estate agents, they think of maybe the extrovert who is super outgoing and a networker and lights up the room. I am not that person at all. I much prefer, like if I'm meeting a new group, I'm an introvert. I'm pretty heavy introvert. But for me, holding up a phone to speak to a camera is way easier than trying to meet like 50 new people.
Of course.
So I get to be an introvert with my camera. And fortunately, in this world, that costs basically nothing to do. And then I can post that out and thousands of people can watch me being an introvert to my phone camera.
So now we've arrived at your YouTube channel, which is why your setup looks so good. Is that right?
That's it. Yeah.
Tell us about your YouTube channel.
The book you mentioned before, Thou Shalt Prosper, you get paid to solve problems for people. And the bigger the problem, the more you get paid. And so anything you're doing in any business, let alone real estate, and providing content, it's what you guys do with your podcast here, is if you provide valuable content to people, like you're going to get paid for it, you know?
Yeah.
So the channel is simply my best effort to try to bring value to people. Specifically, who it reaches the most are people looking to move to the area. So if you have a family who's looking to move to Cincinnati, I go, well, what are the questions people would want to know if I'm moving to a city? Which are, what's it like living in that city? What are the pros? What are the cons? What are the taxes like? What are the good schools? What are the good neighborhoods? How much can I get for this? You know, there's all kinds of, and then you can, you know, it's just like any other internet marketing. There's a funnel and there's like big picture questions. And then you can narrow down to like this floor plan from this builder, you know?
Right.
So every single week I make a video or two or three and just put it out there.
So your channel acts as an advertisement for Cincinnati specifically.
Yeah. Yes.
And I know a lot of our Abe's Wallet people who are just interested in Cincinnati. So they'd be interested in your channel. But your channel is not called welcome to cincinnati.com. It's called Team Stanio, right?
Yeah.
So what you're doing is you're kind of baiting the hook for you should come to Cincinnati. And if you're interested in coming, here's, as you say, here's tax issues for living in this area. I'm assuming you do. Here's the best ice cream parlors in town, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd like to do more of that. I'd love to connect more with local business owners and feature them. But yeah, that's the idea.
Have you gotten leads off of that?
Oh, yes. Many leads.
So people, you told me people watch your videos and they'll go, based on that video, you're now my real estate agent and I want to move to Cincinnati.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd give myself that much credit, but it's again, think of any channel or podcast or video channel you subscribe to. You trust the person over time.
Sure.
Especially if they're authentic and or have some level of competence. And, this is not unique to real estate, obviously. But it does build authority. It builds trust. And so it is very common that someone who is moving here might stumble across the channel, watch 5, 10, 15 of the videos. And so they've built up all this trust and credibility with me as their agent. They could still choose anyone else, but they're like, I like that guy. And so the message comes in like, hey, we're moving in the spring. Been watching your channel. Thanks. Super helpful. Can we connect? You're our real estate agent.
Okay. So, that kind of blows my mind. I didn't know that that was even a possibility. Had you seen someone else that had done that?
Yes. And I copied him. Exactly.
Great. kind of like using Keller's Red Book.
Exactly. I don't that's a huge reason why I got into real estate in the first place was this produces more millionaires than any other thing in the world. And B, I don't have to recreate it. And I was really struggling with that in internet marketing. And I'm not much of a creative, but like in real estate, it's just like, it's all right there. Just go copy that thing.
Pain size the numbers.
Yeah. It's very, very much like the business for that way.
Okay. We've gone in your story from a guy who's kind of uncertain about where he's going. You find this niche. I think it's a pretty pretty significant moment when, as you say, you look through the description of being a real estate agent and go, holy cow, that's me. You start to move in this area. You start to sell houses to people. I don't know how you make this decision, but over time you gain the expertise to go, I'm going to keep that house and I'm going to be a landlord. You rent out a handful of houses. You're a landlord. You juggle all of the debt and all of the mortgages for all of these properties that are owned by your LLC.
Multiple LLCs, debt, not so much. People might be familiar with kind of the Burr method. Where you use a lot of debt and leverage, and I'm not opposed to it. And in fact, as a younger man, I was very much like, yay, leverage, good debt, buy an asset. I'm still cool with that. But, as we were flipping, I've gotten involved with Dave Ramsey and I'm like an endorsed local provider for him. So I started listening to him, and I can hear Mark probably like getting antsy right now, just him listening to this. I don't know, but
you're like, what is it about Dave Ramsey that you like or don't like?
Well, I was going that route, and then I was going to probably use leverage to buy like larger apartment buildings. And I still think that's viable, but instead I just, for me personally, I kept getting good deals on these single family homes. And instead of flipping them, I was just like, you know, I'm going to fix them up and rent them out. I'm not going to have debt on them. So the handful that we own, free and clear right now. So the cash flow is great on those. And part of that decision was currently I am doing the property management. I'll hire that out eventually. And instead of leveraging and getting like a bunch of doors where I have to worry more about management, I only have a handful right now. It's not super complicated. And where my kids range from 14 down to 4, 14, 12, 9, 6, and 4. I'm just keeping it tidier. And there's also a lot less stress that if something does go completely haywire or, you know, the tenant goes out for a little bit, I'm not beholden to the banknote.
Right.
So we're just doing that. We're saving up. Then we buy the next one. Then we save up and buy the next one right now.
Okay. So it's working for you. You're people using you as an agent. That's working. You've got a little stable of houses that you're a landlord for. So my question is, at what point, and I'll throw in here, not to be indelicate, but I assumed things were, I remember when you started up and it's sort of like, well, you take my business card and, you know, like you're trying to like, hey guys, I'm going to try this out now. And I didn't know much news. I didn't know much news from that, but, a recent data point for me was coming up into your backyard and seeing an addition that you're putting onto your 1910 house. When is your house built?
Yeah, 1905.
Yeah. 1905. And the addition is bigger than the house. It's bigger than the house. And I thought, things are going well for Eric. Are things going well for Eric? So maybe when that thing is done, we'll have a tent tour, because I know that you're designing. Yeah. You're like one of the few kind of exciting people to talk to, because like Mr. Pryor next door, your next door neighbor, Mr. Pryor, you will have planned your home based on an Abrahamic family model. The way that you're using your home will be, because you're thinking multi-generationally, you're thinking of your home as a headquarters for the local church, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that's all exciting. So we'll do a tent tour someday. But my question is, at what point did you personally feel like, I think this is going to work? I don't think I'm going to have to look for another career in 5 years. I think this is it. I think this is happening.
Good question. That was probably into year two of it. As it was growing early on, there was a lot of my wife and I looking at each other going like, is this really happening? just genuinely surprised that it was working, because I felt like we were hitting so many walls before. But yeah, I would say like even now we're still, you know, the addition is, for me personally, there's a large chunk going towards that, as you noted, and it's slowing down some of the financial plans for sure. But it's, we got to the point with our current house and what we wanted to do with our family, with the church in the future, where my wife's like, we need to make a decision on this. And so that, alongside with the, you know, the rentals for me are a little bit of security in that, like, if I go get hit by a bus, it's like my wife can, she's getting this income. My kids are getting this income.
Yep.
And so, I don't know if I'm answering your question really well. Probably.
No, no, you're doing fine.
Yeah, it's, the house is super fun. Like you said, we lived in the house next door while the Pryors built their multi-generational multiple additions and watched their parents move in. Been very helpful for nearly 20 years now to look at someone I respect and has so much wisdom and who is 7 or 8 years in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, that's just such a blessing to be able to do that. And go, and again, just like real estate, it's like I can look right there and be like, oh, that looks like a pretty good idea. I think I'm going to do that. So yeah, we've built it with the idea of the now and how we can use it for our family and the church and aging parents. And we're trying to build it for when so we can die in it. You know, we're putting a first floor bedroom in it.
Yep.
We're building it so that when our kids are getting married and are in that weird 20s season where they might not be making a lot of income, but they've got a kid, could they come back into the basement and have an apartment down there? And yes, the answer is yes, they can, because we're building that for them.
Yeah,
and we're telling them that at 12 years old. And we're saying, hey guys, this is where we want to be forever. What actually happened was four years ago. So I was looking this up earlier. I've been doing goal setting for myself since 2009.
Okay.
And that has morphed over the years. I went to work with some guys who had a whole goals retreat summit where it's like, write your obituary and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I came across your guys's. And so the last few years, so now it's like this big, gigantic monster blob goal thing.
Yes.
Where my wife is like, do we have to go through all of that? So it's more about whittling it down. But 4 years ago, specifically, instead of just the goal setting, I wrote a narrative out.
Oh.
And what's really fun, and the narrative was for 20 years in the future.
Uh-huh.
We wrote it kind of in 2020, and then I wrote it for Sukkot 2040.
Oh, cool.
And I had all of our ages, all of my parents' ages, and then I wrote a story for the night, one night of Sukkot, and where we were as a family.
That's really cool.
And that, again, that's not something natural to me. That's just like, because I've been around this idea and we were like, it needs to be more than just like, we'll make X amount. We'll have X.
Sure.
But the narrative, it was like, what does it smell like? What does it sound like?
Yeah.
What does it taste like? And so it was like, oh, there's babies crying. There's pies being baked.
Amen.
There's a fire going. We're talking about politics and who we're discipling, and you know, even down to like, oh, it's 9:30. The grandkids are breaking down. The kids better go home. You know, like, so I made that whole night. And what's really fun about what's happening the last few years and the addition is like, we wrote this thing and it's like coming to life.
That is so cool.
And part of it was like, and I didn't know this was happening because we were looking for real estate all over town. But I wrote like, oh, we hung out with the Pryors tonight for Sukkot. Like, and, you know, it's just like, and we're on Bluegrass and all the kids live within a few miles of us and how many kids they had. So that's been really amazing. And part of the credit is to you guys, like your encouragement for getting away and having those retreats with my wife. We've done that every year the last several years where we're just pondering and dreaming on this stuff. So, and it's like literally being built in my backyard. Justin Wolfenberg, who you've also had on the show, is our builder. And so all the guys who are building the house are the sons of all of our friends.
That is so amazing.
And they're like, we look out our back door and there's these teenagers, boys becoming men. And, you know, a big reason why we chose Justin, if not the reason, was like, I want my sons to build this house.
Right.
And so the vision, you know, maybe this is a little sinister, I don't know, but it's like, we've got this vision where we want this home to be the hub until we die and to be a hub for all of the family events. And it's like, if I can get my children to actually swing a hammer on this place, they're going to be like, remember when we raised that wall?
Of course.
Yes, I remember, you know.
Of course.
And so it really is a beautiful thing that's happening right now. It's a little scary and terrifying. And to your point, I think my wife and I are not really good at understanding scale of blueprints to like what's in real life. But we're looking at it and we're like, oh my gosh, what did we do? Yeah. And we were reading Luke 14 this week in our church, and it talks about the man who built the tower and ran out of money. And I'm like, passage is like haunting me right now.
Everyone's eyes cut to you in the whole room. Oh no, we've still got some money, guys. Come on.
Yeah. No. So we might have to move a few things around, but the Lord's really blessing it. And again, this could all blow up. My wife, you know, I'm sorry for rambling on. She's like, hey, what if we get here and everything blows up? And that's to me the thing I keep testing my heart throughout this is like, what if we have to sell it? What if real estate stops working well?
Right.
What if, I don't know, America goes crazy, like, or we have to move, and I'm just like, that's okay. Like, we're doing this thing. We built this vision.
Faith.
Yeah. And if all these plans change, Lord, we're following you. And that's the thing I don't know until it happens, but I'm like constantly trying to ask my heart or test my heart. Like, are you doing this for yourself? And I know there's some of that in there where, yeah, I am doing this for myself. But I'm also like, I'm telling the kids, I'm telling them, like, I can't wait to invite people here. Like, how do we use this house for the kingdom? Who are we going to invite in? Who's it going to bless? You know? And so,
yes,
we're talking about all that now and trying to figure out, cause we're about to enter into that season where it's like, we're less in the younger kid phase and more in the like, okay, we can. And again, we've seen that next door at the Pryors with these teenagers. Once they get released, it's like, whoa. Okay, what are they going to bring into this place? It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. And can I obligate you right now that not only you're going to have the great room like the Pryors, but if you're out of town, we can come use your house for YAM meetings whenever we want.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we designed it like this.
Okay, good.
Yes, the answer is yes.
We're wrapping up, but I want to step off the stage. This isn't the main topic, but the fact is that we know that many, many of our listeners are females, their wives.
Yeah.
And these young families are in this position, and you have just given Whitney really good grades on how she weathered this process of not knowing where my husband is going or what will be our provision next year, et cetera. Any observations of yours as a husband that you would say, you know, if I could encourage a wife who's in this uncomfortable position of either not knowing what you're doing with your career or you're in the middle of a transition, here's what it meant for me to have a wife that acted this way, or I would give this kind of advice for wives who are in this spot.
I love my wife. She's going through it right now. Like, it is she's homeschooling 3 kids, has a 4-year-old. Our oldest is in public school. And she's, of the options we had, which was go buy a house somewhere else that fits our needs, build somewhere else, or do the addition, this is by like a magnifold of 10 times the hardest, you know, by far. It wasn't like it was her dream to build and design a house. This is not her wheelhouse. She has to make all these decisions every single day and research shingles and, you know, like windows. And this is not like, oh, I've just always dreamed of doing this. No, she hates it. Like, she's not very pleased. However, she is lovingly following the vision, serving me and the family in doing something really, really hard for something that we by faith hopeful will turn beautiful. You know, over the years as she's interacted with you, she's not afraid to like tell it how it is either, or like push back on different things. And what's beautiful about my wife is she's we joke about it, but it's true. Like, she is a woman to contend with.
Yeah.
And it makes me a better man and pushes me. And so it's not my wife there. I don't know. There's a broad spectrum of types of women. My wife, I believe, I'm going to pull a Jeremy Pryor and bring in the Lord of the Rings world.
Okay. You're nerding it up. Here he goes, everybody.
She leans more towards the Eowyn character. Who's a warrior. Okay. And so the fact that she's been in the home, it's not like this is my natural environment to cook meals and to homeschool my husband's children and to design and build an addition, because she needs to relate and connect and network with other people. She is amazingly gifted at it. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, I'm very excited for, as our kids grow into this next stage and where she will be released in that spot. I feel like she has lovingly served the vision of the last 10 years. And I'm like, where God has brought us financially and with our family and with this house, I am very much looking forward to like the next 10 years for her. And I don't know what that looks like right now currently. But I'm thrilled to see God use her, because anywhere she goes and anyone she interacts with, they're like, you know, they're just like, we need more of you, you know?
Yeah.
She's just incredibly intentional and loving and empathetic. And I just, sorry, that's a long answer. I love
her. No, it's fine.
Do you want me to gush more about my wife on the
podcast? No, it's great. I enjoy you gushing about her. What comes to mind is the passage in 1 Peter 3 that says that you wives should be like Sarah, who was in such radical submission to Abram that she referred to him as Lord. And it says, you wives, if you can do this and not give in to fear, you'll be doing very well. You know, it ends something glorious and promising. And I just think of a wife going through like what Whitney has, and she has had to make a decision over and over. I will not give in to fear. I'm going to follow Eric by faith. The Lord's going to do right by us. I don't know what that looks like. It might mean suffering. It might mean more failure, but the Lord's going to do right. And I'm going to follow, and I'm going to believe and serve. And that's so hard, and it's noble, and it's so impressive when you see it, because usually in American culture, the wife's role is to browbeat her husband, to try to smash him into a cookie cutter predictability that provides a veneer of security, when really what godly wives want is a man who's willing to go into the frontier and to build something. And even if you've had a blueprint for the things that you've done, you just told us the story of how you started with going like, I don't know. And you end up with this thing that's working and is growing and building. And I esteem both of you for this process you've been through. Obviously, I esteem you, or I wouldn't give you an episode. So I think you're an example that people can draft on. So bless you for the faith and courage that it's taken you to find your way to where you are now.
Thank you for saying that. That means a lot. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
Looked up to you for a long time as well. And yeah, I hope this is helpful to someone out there.
It is very much. And thank you for your time, Eric.